This is Jeff Garland.
So,
and someone's at the door.
Yes, they're going to bring us. Come in.
Oh, lovely. Who doesn't love Fiji water?
It is Fiji water.
Yeah.
Which, by the way, have you looked?
Oh, cheese and crackers.
This is amazing.
And now some fruit, which makes
which
me very
really,
happy.
Well, especially the crackers. But have you ever really looked to see where Fiji water is from? That's
from Fiji.
Are you sure of this?
Yeah.
You have proof of this?
Yeah. Well, I don't have proof. I'm not following things. Thank you very much.
Thank you. You were going to direct. You were going to be in the background on Curb Your Enthusiasm.
Oh, Curb Your Enthusiasm, yes.
Yeah, you were not originally designed to be, we'll get to the movie soon, but you were not designed to be a cast member. So how?
I was designed to be a cast
member.
Well,
you were designed, but you were not originally.
No, in my head, I was not going to be a cast member.
Right. So my question is, how was the role of Jeff?
I just opened my water.
Yeah, I'm going to
do like, I like just like narrating so people know, like, what's that sound?
Well, yeah, you know.
So it makes it now I'm pouring the water.
Make sure you get the pouring of the water. Mm-hmm. So how was the role of Jeff Green originally sketched out? Because
it wasn't sketched out. The role of Jeff Green was just Larry saying, I have this manager character in mind, and I want you to play it. You have to play it. And you don't want to direct this show. You want to be the executive producer. Those were his words to me.
And that,
there was never a time where, like, oh, I got to get a handle on this, or I felt like, oh, I'm grooving now. From the very beginning, the most important thing was that Larry and I had chemistry. And truly, Larry and I, it felt like we'd been working for 40 years together. So it's not anything that I found along the way. It just happened. And I based the character on no one. I don't overthink this stuff. You know, when I'm doing a scene, I might be thinking about, is there cheese at lunch?
Is there cheese there?
You know, I mean, I really am. I don't overthink any of this stuff. So I don't think about the roles with zero or whatever. I just go do the work.
Where was the division between jokes, telling jokes, mm-hmm. and sketch comedy?
The division of comedy happened with Lenny Bruce.
Okay.
And then I think everything post-Lenny.
Because Lenny Bruce is freeform.
Yeah. And very real and very grounded. Whereas, although he did do voices and little sketches in his stand-up, but nonetheless, that was the division. But prior to that, there was a falseness to it. You know, I bet you Jack Benny was one of the most generous people ever. I know he's one of the most kindest, and I know as an audience member to other comedians, he was a hard laugher, which I take great pride in. But the difference in comedy was, and this is around the same time that Second City came about, Lenny Bruce, Shelley Berman, Nichols and May, Mort Saul, and then, you know, Bob Newhart. I mean, it became different. Comedy became different at that moment.
One of the quotes that I heard you say was that stand-up still offers you the artistic freedom, because I'm sure the people come up to you every moment and say, so wait a minute, you're still doing stand-up here.
Stand-up's a great art form. I mean, it's an art form that I respect. I don't see, you know, there's not, as I get older, there's less peers that I see doing it, and B, who are around the same place as I am. And it's a lot of young guys. Like, I go to the, when I'm in L.A., I do a show at Largo, which is this theater in L.A., mm-hmm. but I also play the Comedy Store and the Laugh Factory, and generally, I'm one of the oldest people. You know, there might be a one or two older than me, but at 50 years old, I'm an old guy.
And that shouldn't, in any other industry,
mm-hmm.
you know, that shouldn't be old.
Well,
really.
Age has nothing to do with anything, to be honest with you. It's all about relevancy.
Right.
See, I'm respected by the young guys by A, what I've accomplished, and B, because I'm relevant. My stand-up is relevant. I'm doing things that they're not even doing yet sometimes, you know. They're learning. Not that I'm not always learning, but it's all about relevancy. I mean, you look at rock and roll, it's all about relevancy. You know, Neil Young, how old is Neil Young? How old is Mick Jagger? Are you relevant or are you not relevant? That's really what the question is, not how old you are. Although, when I watch Leonard Cohen, I just saw Leonard Cohen perform recently.
Yep.
It's amazing to see a man 78 years old. First off, he sings an entire song squatting. Who can do that?
I can't.
And then he skips on and off stage. I mean, he's 78, and he's still, his voice has aged well. It's beautiful. So that's, not only is he relevant, but he is, it's amazing at his age to be so wonderful and so relevant. I try to stay relevant with music. It gets harder and harder. Because you know what I find fascinating? I was just discussing this with a friend earlier today. The fact that when you were around in the 60s, 70s, and I guess to the degree 80s, but if you really reached artistic heights and you really were something, it wasn't a fad. Like now a band becomes hot and they have like two records everybody buys and then they're gone. And it's like, wait, what happened? There, you know, and then you listen to their third album and it's really good, but people just don't pay attention. It's only now that I see that. I didn't used to see that.
It's a lot more disposable.
Yeah,
which is very much so. Which is very odd because mm-hmm. I think that they just give up if they don't have enough fans on Facebook.
Maybe.
They kind of look and say that's not success. Book Soup. You have a book club there, which is pretty wild stuff.
I pick a book and they announce it. And it gives people at least a couple months to, because people are busy.
To read it.
Yeah. I read about a book a week.
Do you test them to see if they've actually read it?
Yes.
Because that's the trickiest thing. They're just going to show up and say, read the book. And you say, well, what happened on page 300?
No, I don't do it that way.
How do you get them?
I ask. And they tell me the truth.
You just literally say, have you read the book?
Who's read the book? And usually it's about half to two-thirds. And the rest are just there. The rest will have started to read the book, or we've pretty much eliminated at this point the people who are just fans of mine, you know, although a few of them come, but because they would ask me questions when we discussed the book about Curb Your Enthusiasm.
Which has nothing to do with the book.
Yeah, unless
obviously.
It's the book on Curb. I think that it's like my next book. I think I'm doing it in March. And the next book, what is the next book? I'll think of it as we're talking. So it's Clockwork Orange is my next book.
Wow.
Anthony Burgess.
Wow.
Yeah.
So you're not necessarily picking the hippest, coolest. You're just picking.
No, I pick whatever I think is interesting. I did. But he's a good writer too. No, I only pick what I think is interesting. The purpose of the book club, to be totally honest with you, is not because I need to have a salon to go to. The purpose of the book club is that Book Soup sells books. That's the purpose of it.
So you're right. So you want to keep an independent bookstore in business.
What can I do to help Book Soup stay in business? I have a book club. I'm somebody that can draw people. And then when I pick a book, so let's say a Clockwork Orange, they'll order a bunch of Clockwork Oranges, which they normally would have two or three. And they sell a bunch of copies of Clockwork Orange. And that's why I do it. I enjoy it, but there's no other reason that I do it. Because I don't want to, you know, bookstores are closing. I don't want to see them close. I even liked Barnes & Noble. I liked Borders. I was fine with them. But they tried knocking out the indies, and then they're going under. Oh, you know, all these bookstores passing. I was terribly sad when Tower closed. I used to go to the Tower here.
Right here on Columbus.
On Columbus.
Yes.
I would go to the Tower Records
Amazing
all the
store.
Time. And I bought, by the way, at the Virgin here, I've bought records.
Mm-hmm.
And I bought at Tower tons of stuff.
I just had the strawberries, for those of you keeping track.
And how were they?
Really good.
Were they sweet?
They were actually better than the blueberries.
But not overly soft, because strawberries have exactly. It's that
crispness
versus.
Yeah, I know. But to me, the big problem is the soft apple.
Oh, that's not even acceptable, though.
That's not acceptable.
How could anybody even... Well,
I take one bite and I'm done.
But hard pears are the same as a soft apple.
I don't think so.
Really?
No, because the hard pear, if it's tasty, you can deal with the hardness of the pear. If it's not tasty, it usually isn't.
Right.
But I've had my hard pears that have been tasty.
So which apple, of all the apple varieties, though...
Do I enjoy?
And which one is the most evil when it's soft?
Well, the
Macintosh, I would imagine.
Is the worst when it's soft.
That's the crisp
factor, no, I would agree
factor,
with you.
Right?
But I'm a big Fuji apple guy. Love Fuji apples.
You know, it's funny.
What is funny? There's nothing funny about Fuji apple. What's funny?
You see, that's right. It's one of the colloquial expressions.
Yeah.
What's funny about a Fuji apple is that I'll bet you that people shy away from them because of the name. Number one, Macintosh just feels...
Well, that means there's more Fuji apples for me.
But I'm saying that... Exactly. But yeah. I'm saying that I think Fuji's a maligned apple.
I don't know if it's maligned.
It's common. It's not as expensive. You can find them at the Ralph's. You can find them anywhere.
Well, I think they're the tastiest apple by a million
miles.
Going
to a gourmet shop, though, and ask for a Fuji apple, they're going to look at you
what?
Like you just don't have it.
I didn't know that.
It's true. Try it. I've done it. I've been shamed.
There's nothing shameful about eating a Fuji apple.
Well, at least we've cleared that up.
Mm-hmm.
What I'd like you to do, since you obviously like music and like rock and roll, is give me a pile of songs that I can play uninterrupted for the second half of this hour. Anything you want me to play, I will play it for you.
I'm just going to name favorite artists and pick songs.
Do it.
Across the Universe, The Beatles. The one that's on Let It Be.
Yes.
Okay.
I understand.
Okay. I would like to hear Neil. I'm not going to hear it, but Neil Young, Needle and the Damage Done. Let's see. How many songs do you want?
Oh, you got a bunch.
Okay.
You got a bunch.
Needle and the Damage
Done.
We got
time. We got lots of time.
Let's see here. Let's go to Dylan. Karina. Bob Dylan. A lot of versions of that.
Yes, there are.
Yeah, a lot of jazz versions too. Speaking of jazz, why don't you play All Blues by Miles Davis?
Nice.
Okay. I'm sorry if I bore people with that one. Play Pink Floyd. What's the Lunatic is on the Grass?
Yeah.
The one that leads to All That You Feel, That You Touch. Put that on.
Yep.
Okay. Inner City Blues, Marvin Gaye.
That'll be a nice segue, won't it?
Yeah. Inner City Blues, Marvin Gaye. Hey Joe by Jimi Hendrix. Dazed and Confused by Led Zeppelin.
Nice.
Okay. I think we're good there. You got plenty of music.
I think I do.
Yeah. Okay. Down. I love Dazed and Confused.
It's good stuff.
Yeah.
And they're still relevant. Jack White wouldn't have a career.
You know, it's funny you
without,
say that.
Without Led Zeppelin.
I was listening to Blunderbuss. Isn't that the name of
yes, the new album? Yes, the new album,
yeah. I was listening to that on my plane ride here, actually. I've listened to it numerous times before, but I thought, boy, he really is indebted to Led Zeppelin, but he doesn't sound exactly like Led Zeppelin. I dig Jack White. I have a lot of friends that don't dig him as much as I do. But I like the White Stripes. I like Jack White a lot.